dream last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music.
It was deep. It was underground.
Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air.
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben Ronde and welcome to a brand new podcast of a State of Trance with this week not an artist that's been in the scene for 20 or 25 years already, but a fresh artist in the studio, Gerbert Doppenberg.
Thank you so Doppenberg.
How are you doing? Yeah,
thanks, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. It's nice to meet you finally, the man behind all the beautiful music. This podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about your history, your future. And I also have a couple of questions that the fans submitted through Instagram. And we always start at the very start. How did you become a producer and why did you want to start making music?
That's quite a long story, honestly.
Don't worry, we have all the time in the world.
Okay. I think it goes back to when I was like 12 years old, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I just started listening to the radio, honestly. Just radio. And around that time, Swedish House Mafia and Avicii, all that sort of sound became popular.
Yeah.
And I remember I just really liked it, to be honest. And yeah, I think like 2 years later, for some reason, I just found an episode of State of Trance somewhere.
Okay.
I think it was...
It was under the couch, it was laying somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere, I don't know, on the internet. And it was like episode 600 or a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was so cool, like the music on there. I wasn't really used to listening to electronic music before, only the stuff on the radio. So, but basically I grew up listening to mostly classical music.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was like a new thing to me. And I really liked it. So I remember when the State of Trance 2013 compilation came out,
mm-hmm.
I just started listening to it over and over again. And I just started wondering, like, how do people make this music?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no instrument, and in classical music, you see people playing an instrument. And yeah, so I just Googled it, found FL Studio, downloaded it, and started working. Yeah, and the first couple of things just sounded like nothing, basically. I just knew nothing about music at all.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, and I think I learned it pretty fast. Like after 1 year or a year and a half, I signed my first song to a small label.
Yeah.
In Scandinavia.
That was Rise Again, 2015.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You did your research.
I did a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, it was on a label called Ionized Records. I remember that. And yeah, I thought like, okay, I might actually be good at this, mm-hmm. maybe. So I'll just keep trying. And that was sort of the moment where I was like, okay, I wanna do this seriously now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, what was it? In 2016, I think, 2015, I went to a flashover event.
Yeah.
With the label Ferry Corsten. I was like 17 years old back then. So, and I was working on a demo with a friend back then. Mm-hmm. Like we made it in, I think, a week.
Yeah.
And we just went to the event, showed it to the A&R manager back then. And they really liked it. They're like, yeah, we want to sign this. Just make it a little bit shorter because the breakdown was too long, I think. Something like that. And yeah, so we did that and we signed our first song. It was called Sound of Goodbye back then.
Yeah.
And yeah, from there on, I was like, yeah.
Okay, you were like, okay, I'm good at this. I can do this.
Yeah.
Okay. But then I want to go back a little bit when before Rise Again was even released, because there are some big steps between when you started Fruity Loops and you actually managed to release Rise Again.
Yeah.
What was your first steps into music production that you were like? Because I want to address this podcast a little bit to the up-and-coming producer like yourself, that you're making big steps right now, but there's thousands of people that are aiming where you are right now, because that's you're releasing on a State of Trance. People are, like, thousands of people are listening to your music right now. How did you start your process in Fruity Loops at that moment until the very first release? How did you train yourself, for example?
It's always a boring answer, but...
It's very useful.
A lot of doing and experimenting, honestly. Yeah.
So trial and error.
Yeah, basically. So this the thing that we have YouTube nowadays, so you can just look up stuff if you want to, but at the same time, a lot of stuff on YouTube is not that good. Like for beginners, it's okay, but then from a certain point onwards, it's just about you doing actual stuff instead of just continuously watching tutorials or whatever. But I think because the first few months, I just knew nothing about production, about music theory, just nothing. So I think what also helped me was when I was like 15 or 16 years old, I think. Mm-hmm. I also started taking piano lessons.
Okay, yeah.
And I started producing when I was 15 years old, I think. Or 14, 15, something like that. So that really helped me because that gave me a sort of idea of how like good music was supposed to sound like.
The right chords, the right melodies, the right progression. Yeah.
Yeah. And because I was also listening to a lot of classical music back then, I sort of had like a vision of like, this is the stuff that I can also put in trance music, like combine the two with like to one sound basically.
Yeah.
It was just at the beginning, it was just a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, piano lessons helped a lot. Like,
so one of the tips that you would give a young producer is just to go into the boring side of things, maybe study yourself music theory and do piano lessons.
Depends on what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, because I really like to combine the two.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that don't care about it too much. So I'd say if that's not a big thing for you and you don't care too much about long melodies and, you know, more advanced music theory stuff, then, it would help, but it's not necessary, I think.
Every study is a study, I guess.
Right, yeah. So, but I think it's always a good thing to learn to play an instrument, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And which tutorials did you dive into first? Like, what? Because I can imagine, because when I look at when I started making music, I'm old, so there was not a lot of YouTube going on. I had to buy books, for example. So you were going, your tutorials were in Computer Music Magazine or Future Music Magazine, or you buy books on, I remember buying books on Reason, on Ableton, stuff like that. Those times luckily have changed. But I'm still watching a lot of YouTube tutorials as well. Do you have certain tutorials that you dove in first in the beginning when you were starting to make music?
I can't remember it. I think just the basics about FL Studio because I wanted to
learn. How does it work?
How does it work? That's the first step, obviously.
Yeah.
So just get to know the program, basically. And it's not that advanced, FL Studio, to be honest. It's quite easy. I think it's easier to learn than, for example, Ableton or any other program.
That's because you know it.
That's true. But I think it's also easier to learn at the very start.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people start with FL Studio, but in the end, it doesn't really matter.
And a lot of people still use FL Studio.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
For example, Estiva uses, I think Afrojack, I think Martin Garrix still uses Fruity Loops. Well, there's a Mara Levy also, I think so. There's a lot of people that stick to Fruity Loops as well because it's a good program.
It is, yeah. I think they really evolved. Like,
yeah.
Because I think 10 years ago or something, it wasn't that good probably.
No. Well, I remember using one of the first versions and I think one of the revolutionary things that they had was the step thing, the step sequencer basically brought up.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember using that, but that's... I switched to Ableton really fast, to be honest. Yeah. And then you had your first release, Rise Again. You already told about your first steps into flashover recordings. There was an alias called Remark.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something different than Toppenberg is right now? Remark back then?
Yeah, I think a little. I think because I wanted to keep... my first alias was... I didn't really think about an artist name too much. Like, and I think it was even my manager who came up with this artist name, Doppenberg, because it's just my last name.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. But like back then, also the first couple of tracks on Flashover, I think there was already Doppenberg in the name.
Yeah, Doppenberg presents Remark.
Yeah. And that was basically because I, at first, I had like a thing where I just wanted to go a different direction with Doppenberg. More the progressive side at first. And later it just became trance. But I was still in doubt, like, what to do for my main project, basically. So back then it made sense for me to do it under an alias.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm quite sure, like, okay, this is the direction I want to go for just my main project. And so I'm just releasing stuff.
So that's when you dropped a Remark name and just said, okay, this is where I'm going right now.
Yeah.
Then it took you quite some years that you realized that this is the sound that you want to do.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Because I've experimented with a lot of different music styles. So all the way from, I think I even made hardstyle at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Which I don't even like anymore, but to be honest. But yeah, I did a lot of progressive stuff, pop music. I don't even know. I did some really weird stuff back then. Just sounds like whatever. There's no genre you can put on it.
Sometimes it's a good thing, but sometimes it's a very bad thing.
Yeah.
No, I find this interesting because every guest pretty much that I had in the podcast for the last 3-4 months, I told you in the episode as well, is either in the industry for 20, 25 years already. And they were there in the very, very first beginning, making music with hardware only and stuff like that. And that's total different times that you grew up in music, because when you started making music, Martin Garrix was already there.
Mm-hmm.
Dimitri Vegas, like Mike, were already there. So the spectrum of amount of genres that you could pick was way bigger than it was for these guys to grow up in music.
Yeah.
And what made you decide that you wanted to go for the music that you're doing right now?
Yeah, so there's not really one moment where I thought like, okay, this is where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
But it just came naturally, I guess. I think because back when I was releasing on Flashover, I also started with uplifting trance, doing uplifting stuff. But at the same time, I was doing a lot of other different stuff that never got signed.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's just weird stuff without a genre, and no label wanted it, to be honest.
The only person that likes it is yourself.
Yeah. So, but I think after a while at Flashover was like, I'm a bit bored at this. So I started doing, I almost quit music, to be honest.
Okay.
Back then for a while, because there's also a gap between my stuff at Flashover and like last year when I released stuff on the State of Trance.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in that time, I just learned a lot about classical music, classical composition. you know, just for some people it might be boring. I think it's quite interesting. But just studying like big composers like Bach, Schubert, Mozart, name it. Like, because for some reason, I just found that interesting back then for a while. And it was also during the pandemic, so there were no events. I just didn't go anywhere. So it just didn't make sense for me to make dance music at that point.
Okay, so you were just focusing on classical music.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which might be a bit boring for some people. But for me, it was quite interesting back then. And I think that really helped me a lot, because then I was like, okay, why not combine the two?
Mm-hmm.
Just make trance again, the uplifting side. You can easily put in classical elements.
Yeah.
And also just the classical theory. so that was some sort of a moment where I was like, yeah, this might be cool.
And it worked.
Yeah, it worked out. So I remember I did Twice as Far.
Yeah.
That was last year. No, I made it 2 years ago already. And we first sent it to Flashover and they were like, yeah, it's too long for us. We don't want to sign this. Just make it shorter and then we'll consider signing it. And I was like, no, I'm not going to make it shorter. So
that's very strong.
Yeah. I don't know. I just believed in that song. So
yeah.
I was like, yeah, no, I just don't want to do it because there's a lot of different melodies in there. It's just not repeat the same melody repeating over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense for me back then to make it longer than just 5 minutes or whatever. And yeah, Estate of Trance wanted to sign it. So yeah. And that's why I was like, okay, this is a sound I think it's really interesting now.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing that now.
Unbelievable. I like that. Yeah, I think that's a very strong thing that you say right now, because in general, especially when you're up and coming producer, when you get feedback on your track, even I do the same. Like if I get feedback on a track, I take it along. And sometimes I have the same, like, this is okay. No, this is something that I don't want to change because this is my creative freedom. Yeah. I understand that you want to do it, but you chose for yourself. You chose for your music. You believed in it. And you stuck to it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that's also important because there's a lot of young people, especially, and I think I've been there too, but and they're just too focused on getting stuff signed.
Yeah.
Especially in the early years when you're just starting out, I think the first four, five, 6 years, if you're lucky, you're going to sign something, but it's not a big deal if you don't. It's more about just experimenting, I think. And once your stuff is good enough, then you can just start worrying about like, oh, this is for this label, this is for this label. But in the end, I think you should also just make music you like yourself.
Do you think it's because I'm going to sound so old right now, the new generation is a bit more impatient, that they want to get everything done and then signed and released tomorrow?
Yeah, definitely. Because I also see a lot of people there. I mean, I'm also sounding a bit old now and like old and wise.
No, but this is very useful. So continue.
Yeah, no. So, but I see also a lot of people and they're just only producing for like 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
And the stuff they're making is okay. Like if they continue doing it, they're going to be fine probably.
Yeah.
But they're just too focused on getting their social media right. They're, trying to message everybody like when you call up and,
yeah.
You know, all those things. I think the first years you should just focus on making music yourself and not really working too much with other people, because you have to find your own sound, stuff that you really like. So yeah, I think that's also more of a thing right now. Like, so many people just want to be there and they just want to be there like as fast as possible.
Yeah. Actually. And the thing is, I know this out of experience because I've seen this a million times. People that come in fast will disappear fast as well.
Yeah, probably.
That's the truth. And especially what you just said right now is very, very, very critical to tell young producers as well. You have to take your time to find your own sound.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point, people will recognize your sound and they will say, they will hear something that they never heard before and they'll say, hey, this is a Doppenberg track. Instead of, hey, this is this, oh no, it's a copy of this and this and this, which is always just a little less good than the original because the original is just, you know, the first productions.
Although I think it's good at the start that you just try to copy.
No, 100%.
Just to learn.
100%. But it's, 100%, because that's how I started out as well. Like you hear certain sounds and you, what works for me was remixing music.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So in the beginning, I was just remixing stuff. But I spoke about, I can't remember, it was a few weeks ago as well in a podcast, that your friends, you shouldn't listen to them because they will always say that it's good.
Yeah.
But the music that I still have some of it, was terrible. It was terrible. But it's all part of your learning process, I guess.
Yeah, right.
But sometimes you have to take the loss and sometimes don't even send it out to a label, but just use it as a learning curve.
Yeah.
So you don't have to sign everything that you make because I think you should only release the best tunes that you make.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, because also for myself, I'm making a lot more music than actually gets released.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of labels that, I mean, Estate of Trance as well, they don't want to sign all my music that I'm making. So it's like, what is it? Maybe if I'm lucky, like 50% they want to sign and the rest is just, sometimes I'm just not releasing it, but very often. And that, I mean, that happens as well, so.
But what do you do if you, this is also a very important part of the process of becoming a producer. What do you do when a label says no? How do you react to this?
It's quite hard because you're also, I mean, there's two ways. Like, you always have to decide for yourself, like, do I still want to release this song?
Yeah.
Or not?
Are they right or am I wrong?
Yeah, and that just takes experience, I think. Yeah. Like after a while, it's just easier to say for yourself, like, okay, I think this one is good and this one's not that good. And sometimes you're just not too sure about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it also helps to send it to some other people I can actually trust.
Do you have like a group of close friends around you that that say, well, that you really trust that they are right or wrong in what you're making?
Yeah, but I don't always agree with them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it also happens like when they are like, nah, it's not that good.
Yeah.
And then
you're like, no, it is good.
Yeah, and then it ends up being like on the same friends, or I think it was with Goodbye as well.
Yeah.
A friend of mine told me like, not too sure about this. And I was like, nah, I actually think this is good. And yeah, for some reason,
I think that's admirable that you have the confidence into saying to your friends that, no, you're wrong. But I guess they also have good feedback on certain tracks.
I mean, they're not wrong. It's something personal, obviously. Yeah. So...
But when you talk about like pure production, like the how is your bass compressed or something like that, you know, sometimes your friends know the right things about that.
Yeah.
Let's dive into some questions that came in from some of the listeners. Linux User wants to know which plugins, VSTs, do you recommend? And I'm very curious about this one. Sorry, Linux, but I'm hijacking your question because you write so much beautiful Augusta stuff.
Oh, okay.
Where do you get your strings from? And your piano.
Yeah, okay. So it's all Kontakt, honestly.
Okay.
The Augusta stuff is all Kontakt. And I think also the first track I played during my guest mix, it's a real violin. I'm also working a lot with actual instrumentalists at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So string players, and it always sounds way better than from Kontakt, to be honest.
It's less static.
Yeah,
it's real.
Definitely. It's real. It's organic. And there's some little mistakes and like it's not 100% on on the grid. But yeah, I'm using a lot of Kontakt for the Spitfire audio stuff is really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's quite expensive though. I'm basically using Spitfire audio for
and
all.
Besides that, what is the secret of your master chain?
don't have a secret for that. It's so simple. No, I just wanted to mix everything well. And mastering is just limiting a little bit of compression, and that's it basically.
So you make sure that everything in your process is already on the right volumes and give everything headroom for?
Yeah, like mastering only takes 10 minutes for me, 5 minutes. That's it. I'm just not really doing anything special, to be honest. And for my production stuff, I think, you know, also the basic plugins are just the best, like for trends, I'd say Spire, Silent One, I still use that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, right. It's really old, but what else? I think like a really interesting thing nowadays is that there's a lot of AI or whatever you want to call it in the plugins as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have this automatic EQs at the moment that can be really cool, like to use or to at least try, because I got one recently, don't remember the name, but I think that really helps as well. It's just a little bit easier sometimes. And just
so you can trust the mathematics behind things.
Yeah, it's like a really new thing, obviously. So it's quite heavy on your computer, but yeah, I like to use new stuff now and then as well. So yeah.
Where do you find your input on all these new things that come on the market? Do you follow certain Instagram accounts or Twitter accounts that bring in the new plugins?
No, just friends, honestly.
Just friends?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of, there's so much plugins. Like every day you get the Plugin Alliance and big shout out to them because they make amazing stuff. But we don't need to do it every day. Another question comes in from Scarlet Pumper Nickel. What is next after Goodbye? Hello?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. I played a lot of new music in the guest mix, so that's all coming out this year or the start of next year, I guess. And I even have more music, new music. I think there will be something on State of Trance this year again as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even on the compilation.
Who knows? Also about your productions, because we just addressed it as well, the beautiful, well, you write music instead of just clicking it and stuff like that. The last track that you played in your guest mix, that was also like a beautiful orchestral piece. Is it something that you want to do in the future as well? Just instead of dance music, just want to compose this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think so.
What's the end goal here?
Yeah, I think so. I would love to score a movie as well, for example. Stuff like that. I think that's really interesting. But also, I think I remember the last track I played in my guest mix. It really is just the melody I played on the piano. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to transpose this to orchestra now and mm-hmm. trance. And it was just literally something I played on the piano.
Just some improv.
Yeah. So that's not bad. It's quite cool. Like I like working like that. And in like what genre you're going to put it in the end, it's not a big deal for me.
No, because in the end, it's about the song that you write.
Yeah.
You can translate to anything. For example, May Salome or Colleen, they probably do just the same thing.
Yeah.
Because they're also, I think that both of them are really, I say, they know what they're doing with their melodies. And
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I really like that stuff as well. The melodic techno-ish stuff, progressive. There's like a big hype around that at the moment as well, obviously. But I think that's really, there's a lot of trance influences in there too.
Oh yeah, 100%.
It's sort of trance, I'd say.
I love it. It's everywhere.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Melodies are, I think we also answered the question of Alice Salant, who wrote, why do you love uplifting trance so much and what made you get into it? I can add to that. What are the artists that you listen to right now the most besides your own music?
I'm not actually listening to my own music, to be honest. But
same.
I think in trance, stuff I really like. I like the stuff Richard Durand is doing.
Yeah.
I think he's really good.
Also very emotional. And
yeah, right. And also the vocal stuff he puts out mm-hmm. is really good. At the moment I listen a lot to him, to his stuff. Also a lot of melodic techno, mm-hmm. like the names you just mentioned. I think classical music as well still. I still listen to it a lot. And I get a lot of inspiration for that. And that's just the big composers.
Yeah.
Like Schubert, I'm a big fan of him. And yeah, but it's not really an artist, obviously, but because he's been dead for ages.
Well, music always lives on, right? That's the blessing that we have. Also, one of your thing about your music is that in general, especially in this time and age, a melody is maybe one or two bars, but yours go on for maybe 32, something like that.
Yeah.
What makes it so much in your production that you want to tell a story with your music instead of just a repeating melody? Is it because you just want to tell so much in one song that you need that long break, or you need that long melody progression?
Yeah, well, not. I mean, you don't always need a long break, obviously, but I don't know. I just, for me, it's quite boring if you repeat the same melody over and over again. So I just like to add variations, add extra melodies, and that usually means that like the song itself gets longer
mm-hmm.
and the main melody as well, because it gives more room. Like there's also some theory behind it probably, but if like a melody is like one bar or two bars, it's more like considered to be a loop instead of a melody.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a lot, like you hear a lot in techno as well. It's more focused on loops instead of melodies, which I also really like. And it's a different way of storytelling, probably.
Yeah.
I just like this for some reason and play with melodies. Yeah.
And another question that came in from this one is from Nay Whitman. In your opinion, what is the best way to get your mixes and tracks in front of the right people? That's a very, very good question, by the way.
Yeah.
Because the world has a million producers, but there's only a certain amount of labels.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't have the right answer for that because it's always a bit of luck, probably.
I think if I can answer the question for you, networking, because you decided that you want to go to the Flashover convention,
yeah,
that you want to go to the masterclass here in Amsterdam,
yeah,
put into effort meeting the right people, because face to face you get things done more easily than by email.
That's definitely true. But I think the first track I sent to Amada was also just by email.
Yeah.
So I think that also.
But you already had it in your bag that you were released on Flashover Recording. That's, so that then you already met a certain standard for people that are going to listen to your music.
Yeah.
Because if you write an email to me and I see your name, I don't necessarily know your name, but you say, hey, I released music on A State of Trance, I released music on Flashover, that means that the bar is already there.
Yeah.
So I know that it's going to be good music, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's, yeah. I think that one of the best things, Neya, is just to network. Go out. If a certain artist that you really enjoy is in the country, try to see if they have a chat for a second or a minute.
Yeah,
or,
definitely. But like what I said earlier, I think your music's production skills should be on point as well.
Yes.
So don't expect to get anything if you've been producing for 1 or 2 years.
Your social media can be fantastic, but in the end, the music is the only thing that matters.
Yeah, right. And then you can focus on all the other stuff.
Yeah. Unless you have a really good TikTok loop.
Yeah. Yeah, that also works now. Yeah. Okay. I said nothing.
Well, thank you so much for answering all these questions. Thank you for coming to the studio and your guest mix on the show, of course.
I hope to welcome
you back very soon again, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Doppenberg is Goodbye just got released, so make sure to check it out. Where can we find you on socials?
It's Doppenberg Music everywhere.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Next time, we're going to be back with another State of Trance podcast with another big talent in the studio. Ahmed Helmi is going to be here. If you have any questions for him, drop them here in the comment section, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in. To check full episodes of A State of Trance for free, simply visit arminradio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.